Welcome to Life Lab with David Ponder and Zach Schaefer. We are the podcast of Experience Experiments.
We give you those experiments via change challenges at the end of each episode.
We created this podcast because we wanted to talk about important topics that can help us all live meaningful lives.
You might agree with what we have to say, or you might disagree. But the point there is that you get something new to think about.
There's no edits and no gimmicks. Our entire point is to help you take action and live a better life.
You only get one life to live, so you may as well make the most of it. Hello! Welcome to Life Lab on this April morning. About to go into some warmer weather, hopefully. We've gotten some cold weather recently. And I can't wait for the warmer weather. I don't know about you.
Dave, I can't wait for anything.
well, that's a problem because in life there's a lot of waiting that goes on, and for a person to be able to be good at waiting for something, you would say that they have a lot of patience.
That's right.
That's what we're going to talk about today.
I think it's funny because oftentimes you flatteringly say, "Oh, you're good at this, man. You're an expert." And this is one I can admit very clearly and loudly: I am not good at patience.
It's funny because I don't consider myself necessarily good at patience, but I guess everything is relative. So if I put myself up against a bunch of people that I know, then I guess, yeah.
Well, it's all relative. There's no objective benchmark for that, but
nobody wants to wait for something that they want.
No, right? The humans are hardwired to have immediate satisfaction of their desires and gratification, but that's tied to biology. It's like if you sit around and wait and talk about, should we run from this tiger or what should we do here? You're dead. So, I mean, that's hardwired into us. So for those people who are able to exhibit patience more naturally, like you, that can be a real strength in today's modern society. Whereas I can, of course, exhibit patience. Like when I say I'm not good at it, it's not my natural tendency. I'm not motivated to be patient naturally. I have to burn cognitive calories to be strategic and focused to be patient, whereas you can probably do it a little more naturally than me and gracefully.
Well, it's probably just part of personality, you know?
Well, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, just ingrained within you. And there's a part – that's an interesting thought, which is there's a part of everyone, which is just how they're born or how their initial experiences are. I think a lot of it – I mean, my theory, and I think there's some backing of this, is that you inherit some of that in your DNA, basically in your genes.
Well, there's a ton of backing for it, yeah.
Yeah. There's a word for it. It starts with an E. I'll look it up anyway. But basically, one of the things I thought that was interesting was when looking at the definition of patience, you know, if I had to define it myself without looking at a definition, I'd be like, it's someone who's good at waiting, right?
I like that definition.
Everything that I'm reading ties it back to like something negative, like being able to bear pain.
Yeah, tolerance. Tolerating,
you know, provocation or strain, right? So there's like a negative element that's put to it.
That's interesting. No, you're right. That is the commonplace way that humans have defined it. I think there's other ways positive to think about it. More of a nurturing persona with others, you know, amiable, easy to approach, easygoing, non-critical to work with. Those to me are attributes of a patient person.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you define it and you put that negative element in, you're putting in the viewpoint of the person who's being patient, and you're injecting their desires and their wants, and you're saying them not being able to achieve those wants and desires, that's the negative, that's the strain, that's the pain that they're having to go through. And yeah, okay, that's true. But if you think about it that way, like, that's self-made. Those are self-made problems.
I think most of our problems are self-made.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-biological problems,
like. And so I love what you just said about nurturing, right? So let's talk about nurturing patients. We've got kids. Mm-hmm. So,
and we approach them very differently, our parenting styles, and that's okay.
Yeah, and I've even gotten way better at being patient with my kids just because I've tried all kinds of different discipline scenarios, and I'm finding that Dylan, who's four now, and he's been through like the tough ages, right? And I see the light at the end of the tunnel with him. He's starting to improve. But whenever he's going through a particularly bad fit where I'm having to deal with him and I'm just having to be patient, right? Like, it's me that wants something from him. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, whether it's for him to go to sleep or for him to sit down or for him to listen to me, whatever it is. It's something that I'm wanting. And yes, I get negative emotions. I have turmoil in me when that doesn't happen immediately, right? And so if I think about that, it's like, I love him so much, right? And I don't want to treat him poorly. So to allow for something that I want, like him to sit down or him to stop being loud or something like that, to then justify me to treat him badly, in it, you know, to try to make something happen. Yeah, it's like, oh man, if I put it that way, it's really hard for me to justify.
Yeah, I guess if you under the assumption that what you're going to do would be treating him badly.
Right. Right.
Because no, there's no, other no, ways to do
that's it right.
where you don't have to spank him or whatever.
Well, and I mean, there's obviously strategic correction as a parent that they might not like it in the short term, but they will in the long term.
If right? you want to be a good manager and leader of other human beings, have kids.
Oh,
have kids and be conscientious around your house, because having kids is just part of the equation. But being conscientious, you have an infinite amount of opportunities to understand what motivates folks, how to connect with others, how to exhibit patience, when not to be patient strategically. But that's hard because that's our daily life, and it just kind of becomes a blinder. It's hard to do that and then take it into the workplace. But for the folks that can do that, man, you can really hone your leadership and management superpowers by practicing with your kids. And then that helps your kids. The definition I went to, which was different, it was the second definition. And I had not an epiphany, but a little light bulb went off. I was like, oh, I've never thought about it. I'm very self-aware, so I know I'm impatient. Everyone that knows me knows I'm impatient. It's funny because at this point in my life, I'm actually way more patient than I've ever been, especially now that I quit drinking. But I've noticed that I've got everyone around me trained to my time schedules and how I think about time. And not in a good way or a bad way, but like, if I'm going to be around people, they know, oh, be on time. Zach's going to be there. He likes people to be on time, or he's on time. I guess that's just how I was over time because I was so busy for so long. It's just weird that other people have picked up on that. Now, I do believe I'm not like the Eastern or South American approach to time. Time is a shared resource. So when you show up late to a meeting, you're stealing my time. You're taking something that could be ours together. If we have an agreed meeting time, meet at that time. And if not, let me know. But that's just how I think of those things. But the definition, that wasn't it. It was about being acted upon by others. That's a patient. When you're a medical patient, you are being acted upon by others. And I think that is probably psychologically somewhere in the core of my impatience. I don't want to be acted upon. I want to do the motherfucking acting. Oh. I want to have the control. I want to be the one driving. I want to be the doctor, not the patient. And so I bet that there's something in there, in the old brain wiring, about why I am impatient.
Well, that makes total – I mean, it's control.
Yeah, 100%.
That's interesting. You know, you think about patience. Ah, yeah, it does. It comes back to control. Like, everybody's waiting for something that they want in their life, and they're working for it, or simply waiting for something to come, some time to pass. And yeah, if they just had control and could make it happen, they would have it make it happen like that.
You can't talk about patience without time. Time is really the core element of what patience is about. So what am I impatient for? I'm impatient for the goals that I've set to occur. I'm impatient for the process that I'm trying to use to go smoothly or perfectly. But it's all time. You can't talk about patience without time. Can you? I mean, I don't know. I'm asking you. I don't think you can.
No. I mean, I think about the times when I'm impatient, and it's usually related to, like, daily hassles, right? So I will get impatient in traffic, but I've realized it's usually when I'm running late.
Time.
Yeah. So if I had given myself the appropriate amount of time to get stuck behind a slower driver, then I would not feel the urgency that I feel, you know, when I'm stuck behind them and I'm like, oh, I'm going to be late. I was going to make it, but this is going to make me late. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, yeah, it's all it is. It's absolutely related to time. So maybe as a strategy, it's, you know, in that instance, if I'm talking about trying to be more patient, it would be giving myself more time or setting my expectations.
Yeah, I love it, but that's just rubber hits the road. That's real tough with kids and just shit going on. And I mean, it's interesting how coordinated life actually is. Just think about a simple situation: meeting a business partner across town. We'll look at our little Google Maps. We'll be like, okay, 20 minutes. All right, I'll give myself 25 minutes. I'll give myself a 5 minute cushion. And 99% of the time, that's cool. That works. That's weird to me. You know, that's why Musk says we're in a simulation. Like, that's too – how is nothing occurring between these two destinations where you just get there? I don't know. That's odd to me.
You know what? Here's something that's interesting to talk about. If you're going to talk about that, is how, you know, with technology, we've been able to become less and less patient.
It forces us to.
Because now we have the ability to do something like you just talked about and plan it better than we used to. It used to be like, I don't know. I mean, like between here and this, pick two points in our metro area. How long does it take? I don't know. I'm just going to have to estimate. If all I have is a map, you know what I mean? I don't know what real-time traffic stats are and everything. You know what does? Google Maps. Right. Google Maps will tell you. It's going to take 18 minutes. At this time of day, on average, it takes 18 minutes, and it's eerie how often it's right. And I used to do this thing where I'd be like, I'll drive faster, and I'll get there before the Google Maps thing says. Nope, I got there in 18 minutes. It's crazy.
That's funny.
But I guess what I'm saying is, yes, it's a weird thing that you can plan for that, but I think technology has even allowed us to plan that even more, and that's pushed out patience in our life. You know, my dad was like, one of my traits of my dad was he likes to be early places. And when he was at work, he would be early every day to work, you know, and he would enjoy that time that he would then have given to himself to like sit and have a coffee in the break room or whatever it is before.
Huh. Have some peace and serenity out of a house with four young guys
exactly,
running around.
Exactly. I read the newspaper. It was for two reasons, right? If I think about it, because he always wanted to have time baked in for if something went wrong, he would still be on time. And my mom was the opposite, and he would get so impatient with her. But he wanted to have that time baked in, so that's number one. But number two, it would make him then, like you said, project that time expectation onto others.
Right. That's something I don't apologize for. Like when I teach students or I would train folks, when we agree to meeting times, that's a commitment. So by breaking that, you're breaking a commitment. Just say, I'm going to break this commitment. Cool. Again, in the Western world, that time agreement is clear. And I think actually with the pandemic, people have done a better job at being good with meetings, in my opinion, or at least anecdotally in my life. But I agree with your dad. Like if we all agree on a time and this is when we're supposed to do it, if something pops up, you need to communicate that and let folks know. I don't believe there's anything as on time. On time is late.
I like what you're saying because it ties back to your element of being acted upon as a patient, right? So if you – let's say you have an appointment. Someone has an appointment with you, right? You're Dr. Schaefer. Put your Dr. Schaefer hat on. Someone's got an appointment with you. You got your office hours on. And you're there, and they don't show. And so, like, how many minutes of your time do you allow them to take? Do you sit there and wait, right?
So, well, like, I mean, I'm very clear and I'm the eyeball. I know how I deal with all those scenarios. Right. Most people don't have a strategy.
Right. So, well, I guess what I'm saying is like, okay, so so clearly in that situation you do. What if you're waiting for a friend to come to a movie or something, right? And now all of a sudden, now you're sitting out in the lobby and you hear the movie is starting and you're missing it. Right? That person is acting upon you and taking away
a shared experience.
A shared experience. You're, you know, at two things. Number one, the shared experience, which is your ideal. Number two, you're what you'd be like, well, I don't want to watch this movie by myself, but it would be better than standing in the lobby right here by myself waiting for this person. Yeah. So yeah, they're acting upon you. They're taking something away. You know, at what point, and here's my question. This is one of the things I've been one of the ways I've been trying to deal with Marin and Dylan is to say, okay, there are consequences to your actions, right? So like, this is your choice. I don't have control over you. I don't have full control over you. As long as you're willing to deal with the consequences of your actions, you can choose to do those things. So like, at what point do you either go watch the movie by yourself and just not meet the person in the lobby, mm-hmm, or just leave or whatever? And then when that person's like, what the hell, man? You'd be like, what? We were supposed to be there. You know, you were supposed to be there at whatever time.
Well, if that's how that person responds, then fuck them.
Well, you they're know, you know how many people would act like that. A lot.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, well, here's the other thing.
We have a friend that we grew up with who's the worst with time of anyone we ever know. We know who we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And he's a wonderful person with a big heart and a caring, gentle person and a thoughtful person, except with time.
Yeah.
And he steals other people's time, and it's very impolite, I believe. That's why I quit inviting him to anything that was important to me, because it ruins my experience of it with other folks.
Yeah, yeah.
It's unfair.
Yeah, you're right. And anyway.
Yeah.
It's just
your time isn't just your time. It's shared time. So,
well, and this goes back to your coordinated piece, right?
Yeah.
So life, everything's connected. Everything's interdependent.
I think patience is the way of talking about all of our inner metronomes. We all have a different pace for our metronomes, and people that are closer to my pace, our metronome goes a little quicker. We like to, if we're in a canoe, we want to paddle in a way to where we can control the current, even though we know we can't. That's just how we're hardwired to try to do that. Other people's metronomes, they go a little slower, and they're paddling just to go with the flow, not control the current. And what's cool about humans is you've got to find a way. Neither one of those is the best approach for any kind of problem-solving scenario. You need both, and you need to figure out how to work together. And when you can do that, man, that's a superpower, to be both impatient at the strategic moments and patient at the right moments. That's when great shit gets built, in my opinion.
That's an excellent metaphor, like the metronome example. Because I can tell you, like, your metronome is fast, right? So like, we could be somewhere waiting for a third party, right? You and I. And I can just see it in you the minute that it goes past the meeting time. Like, you immediately get upset, right? Where me, I'll like, okay, it's a minute past. That's how I feel in the minute past, right? For you, by the time you get to 5 minutes past or 10, you're like, I'm ready to get out of here.
Well, no, because I have a specific way. See, we don't have meetings like that anymore.
Right, right.
I don't go anywhere without a book. I always have a book. As soon as 5 minutes pass, they get a text or a call. Are you okay? Is everything cool? Are we still meeting? I can't even remember the last time somebody hasn't responded to that or been proactive up front. And then we're cool. I'm like, yeah, life happens. People have kids, shit, accidents occur, whatever. Right. If somebody no call, no shows me, that's a different scenario. Then they get the wrath.
Yes, yes. But okay, so yes.
I have, but again, I don't but enjoy you've got your that, system. But I've got a system because
yeah. –
you're not stealing my time. I've got 82 years, according to federal data. Nobody's stealing my time.
Yeah. Well, we'll come back to that because that's an important point. But back to the metronome example, like historically, I can remember times where I would not be anywhere near like close to boiling over yet. But you would already be there.
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Younger, 100%.
But it's interesting. Like,
there's ego there.
Oh, okay.
There's ego there.
Yeah.
You're taking my time. Oh. Me.
That's interesting.
And so clearly ego's still there, but it's less like, oh, me. It's like, hey, this is what we agreed to. Right. Like, come on.
Right. You know, as I've become – well, when I was – as I've become older and my schedule has become more packed, I have – become more acutely aware when I'm in a situation where someone is quote unquote taking my time, that the opportunity for whatever we were going to do is slipping away. And what I'll end up telling them is like, look, man, I have this other thing at whatever time, and now there's not enough time to do this. So we're just going to have to either never do this or reschedule.
Nice.
You know, and that's the way that I handle it. But it bums me out. Because I miss that. I end up missing whatever it was that we were planning to do. Now I don't get to do it. And when I reflect upon my day, there's this block of wasted time, right? And yeah, it takes a toll. When I was younger, I didn't have nearly the schedule that I have now.
God, and so, I hope not.
Yeah. Well, and so it's interesting because I'll take it back to that time when you didn't either. And then it's like, okay, well, what's driving it? And that's where I think it's like, well, it's just that evolutionary thing that's in our genes that's tied back to fight or flight, and it's the fight mechanism, you know, back to like survival. You can't wait around or else you're going to miss the meal, you know, stuff like that that got passed on to our genes. If it's not like tied back to anything specific, right? Like somebody could ask you, well, what do you got to do today, you know, 14-year-old Zach? You know, like, what are you so upset about? You wouldn't have a good answer. You'd just be like, well, they shouldn't be late. I'm pissed off.
I think
off.
It's the best answer. Fun, man. Yeah, I just want to have fun with this person. Well, and they're taking away our fun opportunity.
Exactly. But you get what I'm saying,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There would be less rationale
it. It'd be very emotionally driven.
Yeah, but it's still there. Your metronome was your metronome.
Right.
When we were younger.
I've just been lucky enough to pick a profession where I can do a lot of self-reflection, analysis, and awareness enhancement. And while I can't change my metronome, I can dial it down. And I can do that opportunistically, and I think I can turn it up. And I can use that as a great tool when I'm working with folks to help them identify their not adopt mine, because they can't, but they can figure out what's theirs and to use it to turn it up and down more strategically, because we can all adjust our patience levels with others.
I'll say this. I don't know if you can turn it up or down. You can decide what to do after how many beats.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The behaviors that you exhibit. You can't change the programming.
Right.
But like you can change some of the behavior outcomes that you give to others.
Yeah. Like you, you're amazing at program, like planning out. Like you said, at 5 minutes they get a text. Mm-hmm. At 10 minutes,
yeah,
they
I'm
get,
a weirdo,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, you've got
time.
It all planned.
Like, I decided
out.
A long
awesome.
Time ago. I'm going to use my time the way I'm going to use it.
But what you're doing there is you're not. It's not like you're changing the tick-tock of your metronome. It's still going as fast as it ever did, right? But what you're doing is you're saying, okay, I'm feeling a little bit of stress at the fourth beat of the metronome, just like I always do. But I've decided ahead of time I will take no action until 10 beats of my
I've got
metronome.
A strategy.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then the tactic is the texts and the little behaviors. But the strategy is de-stress. Don't let little things become big things.
Yep.
What's it called? Don't sweat the small things is basically the strategy.
Yeah.
But now where a blow-up can happen is I work the strategy and then somebody's still like root – and I can't remember when this has occurred, so this hasn't occurred lately. But if I work that, I'm always communicating in a way that I would do to others. If I'm going to be late, they're always getting a text. I'm really sorry. Here's what's going on.
Yeah.
When you do that and people don't reciprocate, that's when I have the problem, especially if it's an important scenario, not just like friends coming over. That's just whatever. But man, that again, I can't even recall a scenario when that's occurred. I will say a flip side, having a lot of coaching partnerships, working with folks trying to become better leaders of other people in the workplace. People feel other people's impatience through emails and texts. And so you need to know it's important, I think, to know how those around you work well, especially if they're a professional service provider and you believe that they should be on call for expertise, that's unfair. And so think about if you're asking for information, a small tactic would be to put in your email right up front, no rush on this, get back to me when you can, blah, blah, blah. Because if not, those folks almost take it like, oh, they need this now. They're demanding this right now. And you can help coach them, and that'll improve the relationship over time. Those are the small kinds of things. Help coach people on the timing of what you're looking for, just in small statements like that. It's very, they appreciate it.
No, that's very powerful because I think that's something that drives stress.
100%.
You know, like you look to others around you for their expectations on timing, and then you have to live up to those expectations with deadlines and things like that. And that drives your stress level trying to get all those done into that time so that you're not disappointing that person, so that you're not testing their patience, right? Yeah, I agree with that. And you know, I think we've been talking a lot about it from a perspective of like scheduling and folks being on time or not on time with the things that they. What about? Okay, so there was as I was doing preparation for this, there were categories that it broke out. Patience. There are areas where you can express patience. Mm. One of them was interpersonal, and the example they gave was maintaining calm when you're dealing with someone who's upset or angry mm-hmm. or being a pest. That's one. Another one they gave was life hardships. So finding silver lining and being able to deal with a serious setback that now is going to push back something you wanted to have or achieve, you know, who knows how long. Mm. And then the daily hassles, right? Suppressing annoyance at delays. And I think we've kind of been talking on that one the most. So with those first two, right? Like the one that's most profound to me, I think, that we can get to would be the life hardships one. But what about just dealing with somebody? Like we talked about it with kids, but what about with other people? They're upset, they're angry, they're being interpersonal patience, right? To me, it's almost like flipping the script. With one, we were talking about people stealing our time by not being there or by not meeting a deadline or whatever. This is like now they're being active. They are there, but they're causing a problem. Mm-hmm. They're causing a problem that is stealing our time.
Yeah. I mean, I can't speak to how everyone does it, but as a naturally impatient person for results – and the world to work the way I want it to, I know how I deal with that is I have to literally go into mediation, which is a role. I play a role. It's a very conscious shift from I need to fix this to I want to understand what's going on here. Help me understand your perspective. Understand, turn that difficult conversation into a learning conversation. All about questions, verifying, validating their emotions, their perspective. You know, every difficult conversation is really three in one. Most people focused on what happened, but it's mostly emotions and identity. So I really have to adopt that because if not, and I'm just natural Zach, I'm going to be competitive in it and that's not going
to
help.
Yeah. So it goes back to conflict.
Yeah, I think it does. Conflict management.
Yeah. And so they are causing the conflict. You know?
You perceive them to, but you don't know what they perceive. Maybe they perceive that what you did 2 weeks ago has led to this scenario. And until you start asking questions to understand, not interrogate their perspective, you won't know.
That's so good. Because you're talking about, like they're upset, they're angry, or they're causing a problem. They're, you know, being annoying or whatever it is. And so, you know, just at face value, you're just like, hey, we're trying to do something here, and mm-hmm. you're ruining it. You're causing a problem. But in there, you have no idea what their opinion
obviously,
is.
Obviously, they're not in there going, I'm causing a problem. I'm causing a problem. They obviously don't see it that way. So a more patient person in that scenario, which is really what a mediator is, they're going to pump the brakes, check themselves if they're like me and you know have to have a strategy. Or maybe if they're like you, just more naturally, like, hey, what's going on? Like, well, how do you see this?
That's interesting. I love that strategy. All right. Well, then let's move on, unless you have anything else you want to say.
No, I like that. That's good.
That was really good. I mean, gosh, that, remembering that, it would be such a superpower. You know what I mean? It's kind of there's a piece of empathy in there, right? Like stepping out and trying to see from their viewpoint what's going on.
Yeah, it's all empathy. A learning conversation is empathy. You're trying to learn their perspective. That's empathy 101. We can't ever fully understand it or feel it at this point without, you know, biology or pharmacology eventually getting us there. We'll probably have the powder pill, the movie Powder, where you can touch something and feel completely what that person or animal is feeling. You remember that movie?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
We'll probably get there, but we're not there yet.
But that situation, it's counterintuitive. Because for some reason, whenever you're in that situation, someone's being a problem, right? Especially if they're an acquaintance or someone you don't know very well. Oh, the last thing you want to do
is be patient.
Is to get to know why they're doing it.
Right.
To get to know them and their feelings. You just want it to be over. You know
this
what
is
I mean?
Perfect. This ties into some stuff I've been reading lately again. The Tao, Lao Tzu, Li versus Shi, yin and yang. Li, that is the immediate response, aggressiveness. Take the immediate profit or position necessary to move forward one step towards your goal. It's harsh. It's ruthless. It's grab quick. It's capitalism at its core. She is the intermediate, the intertemporal approach, the more patient approach, focusing more on the means to create positional advantage. And the goal might be then further off. But that positional advantage in the immediate scenario is what you're focusing on. And then the payoff's even bigger, obviously psychologically, because it's taking more time to get there, so you'll appreciate it more. I've realized, you know, it takes a combination of Li, direct aggressiveness, goal accomplishment, and Shi, pump the brakes, work a process, positional strategic advantage for the longer term goal to succeed in life, whether it's parenting, love making, running a business. It doesn't matter. You can't be all Li or all Shi. It doesn't work.
Yeah. And like just making it real to day-to-day life, I would say I've never ceased to be surprised by taking the way that's more measured and thought out, the Shi, right? Because it goes against your gut, your natural fast Li instinct to just take.
Right? Take, run from the tiger, go.
But you can always be surprised by someone's reaction if you do that. You know, and you learn where they're coming from and what was driving them. And like you said, you get a positional advantage, mm-hmm. right? And I think
much of modern thinking, both in Western and Eastern society, comes from military strategy, and not necessarily to just go out and pillage and kill, but to protect and defend. I mean, that's the first strategist that put thought to paper. It was about military stuff. And whether we like it or not, it's a fact. Like, it's a survival mechanism. And so we need to look back and think it's not all about the offense. It's about defense, too. And that could be another kind of simplified way to think about Li versus Shi.
Yeah, I would like to look – so specifically on this position, I'd love to look at – when we're talking about this and applying it to people, not war, not business, mm-hmm. not competition, but people and relationships. Hmm. I would think that whether it be Stoicism or anything, Taoism or Buddhism or just any philosophy that talks about this, I'd like to see what they have to say about taking that positional advantage to the grave, right? Like, do you ever have to exercise that positional advantage? Really, if you're just trying to be the best person, the best you, it's always, you know, getting that quote-unquote positional advantage so that you're serving others.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, if we're talking about patience, you can't not have a you can't not have an ego that needs to get, you know, fulfilled and served or something at some point. But I guess I'm thinking of this in the example of like servant leadership or mm-hmm. something like that. But extending it to friends, extending it to family, to the point where you're always being the one who's, well, you not always, but more often than not, you tend to be the one who is patient. You tend to be the one who is giving. You get what I'm saying?
I believe people butcher servant leadership. Jesus, they always talk about Jesus. Jesus was the servant leader. He had a pretty big goal he was trying to achieve, right? So he was doing all the service and being a follower at times and being a leader by being a follower and caretaker for others. But there's a pretty big goal that they was going after, right? Eternal life and reconciliation and forgiving sins, etc. It's the same thing in the real world. So when you said, I want to focus on people, you know, people. And not business, not war. To me, that's the mistake people make. those things are people. We're not that. It's talking about just people in general. That's a vacuum. That's a thought exercise for a classroom. We live our lives in all those other areas. So we take who we are into business, into my love life with my wife, parenting my kids, war, or how I think about war, politics.
Okay,
that's where it's all at. That's where life is, and friendships. Now, if you meant interpersonal friendships, that's fine.
I think what I meant, if I were going to clarify, would be I wouldn't – so yes, when dealing with people in business, in war, in whatever, I'm thinking of it as transactional, right? Versus – so
as, transformative or transcendental.
As Lee, right? Mm-hmm.
So what I would say is, again, the servant leader in any – so we talk Jesus. That's a big one, which he always gets labeled as a top servant leader. Let's talk about it with friends. Friends, we go to – Six Flags opens up. Let's all go to Six Flags. You get there and people want to go get on different rides and they start to throw some barbs at each other. Well, the servant leader might help people come to a compromise, might develop, help them develop a plan by talking through it and mediating. Is that serving others? Sure. What's the goal? Having a good time so that we have good stories later on to share so that these two don't start a fight and ruin everyone's time. So for me, servant leader isn't just being humble and truly helping others. There's always goals involved. They're just not saying, here's our goal, here's what I'm trying to do. They let that go to the background. The best servant leaders are the folks, when they're done doing their leading, other people don't even remember that they were part of the process and people think they did it on their own. That's the best servant leader.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Yeah. And I think that has to do with it's achieving what you want through patience and sacrifice.
Sacrifice of the immediate or the goal that you came up with prior to the activity.
We always do the deathbed test. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And like, I think when you look back at your life and say, how did I feel? How did I make others feel? You know what I mean? I guess that's what I'm trying to get at with this is like, I think it's probably sure. There's times that you just got to grab and take and do the Lee. But I would think like for the strategy of the deathbed test, you always want to think about the long-term, the quote-unquote positional advantage. And that's, I guess, what I meant when I said if you take it to the grave, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, there will be – instead of keeping score of your relationships with others.
No, that's not good.
You know what I mean? Like I'm looking at it as transactional, as like the, well, nope, I paid last time.
Right.
So now this time it's their turn and I'm going to make them do it. Or mm-hmm. No, I did the work last time and now they have to do it this time. Right? Because ultimately that wears on you. Right?
Yeah, it takes your time to keep score on that and to bring it up. But there's a flip side if somebody's taking advantage of somebody else.
There's no doubt.
Over and over.
There's no
doubt. So you just – and there's no objective line. That's what makes it fun. That's what allows you to flex your communication skills and practice patience in different ways because of all these small opportunities like that. Do I say something to Dave to pay the bill? I've paid it 5 times in a row. Like I don't want to hurt the relationship. But obviously I have a resentment because I'm thinking about this right now.
Yeah.
Those are opportunities.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I love it.
Now, what else do you want? What else do you got?
Well, I mean, the big ones, right? Like, and this one ties back to so much. This one ties back to what I think of with the, you can't control what happens to you. You can only control your reaction to it. The big question everyone asks, why me whenever something bad happens, which is life hardships, right? And how does patience impact a life hardship? Well, obviously, we want certain things in life. We want certain situations to be. And I feel like through life hardships, whatever those things that we wanted, we could have had it, and now we don't anymore. And it's something that we want to get back or you know. And so patience, I think, is a huge piece of understanding that there are going to be times where you live life nobody's ever living life in their perfect ideal state, right?
Or if they
everybody are, wants
if
something.
They are, it's fleeting because, again, you get to the top of Maslow's hierarchy and, okay, let's restart.
Everybody wants something more, right? Like how much is enough more? Mm-hmm. Patience comes into play with that exact statement. And so if we're talking about life hardships, I feel like you can manufacture hardships, right? So something that you've never had but you want. And it's like, man, I just can't get that. That is Oh, that's my big problem. That's my big life problem, is that I can't get that. I can't achieve that, right? And you like manufacture a hardship. And obviously patience comes into play there of being like, all right, well, how long are you willing to go for this thing? You know, and that ties back to grit and never giving up and being able to deal with failure and all that stuff, right? Patience mm-hmm. is a huge element with that. And I don't know if people really think about, because what's the flip side of that? You quit, you give up, you decide you don't want that anymore, right? And it's like, well, I guess he only had so much patience for dealing with that. And then I would say, you know, the flip side of a life hardship would be, what about if it's something that you had and you've lost, dealing with loss? Mm. And like, how does patience come into play there? Either through the grieving and becoming okay, like the wound in you healing and being okay with it, or by saying, yeah, that's something I lost, but I will have again, you know?
You talked about grit. And grit's actually two different things at once. So one's the work ethic and resiliency, and then the second is consistency of interests over time. So, you know, when somebody's like, oh, they gave up early, probably they're looking at that, oh, they didn't – the work ethic piece. They weren't resilient. They didn't stick to it, that kind of thing. I think where we go wrong with it, though, is that people's interests should change over time. Most people's do change. And that's not only not a bad thing. That's a great thing, to get eclectic experiences that you can share over time. Anywho, that ties to what you were saying.
I think that's wise.
But, well, I mean, you were talking very generally about these things, and I thought they were good. You've had cancer twice. So, I mean, you know, like, how were you as a 17-year-old, and again, you don't remember fully clearly, that was a long time ago, but prime of life, and then again, 2.5 years later, sophomore year college, like, I you're impatient to go live life, to just be a young person and have no responsibility, and now you could potentially die. Were you, do you ever remember being in the bed and just being like, oh, I got to get this over. This has to be done. I have to be healthy now. Or was it just more like, okay, we got to do what you got to do?
It was more like the latter. I don't ever remember there being an element of impatience. I don't know why. Yeah, that's something I'll have to think about.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember when I tore, again, nothing at that life-threatening level, but the closest thing I have health related is just tearing my Achilles tendon last year. And I'm happy with the way I dealt with it, because my natural inclination is to just be like, I have to be healthy now. And it's just like, that's not going to happen, you know? And so I really tried to be very patient, and the pandemic really helped. I was able to just focus a lot on doing what they told me to do and not pushing it too hard. Oh, however, here's why. 1 week after, so I had the surgery. I was supposed to throw a big party for my clients the day after surgery. And I was like, fuck it, I'm doing it still. And the surgeon's like, don't. He's like, don't. You're not going to be able to. I'm like, I'm going to. It's a personal challenge. I'm going to do it. I'm not going to walk around, but I'll just be there. He's like, please don't. And then I talked to some guys that had the surgery, and I said, fine, I won't. Thank God I listened to them. But a week out from the surgery, 7 days later, I'm out on my crutches. And he was just like, don't. Don't be doing this. It's raining. I'm impatient for results. I have business to run. I got meetings. Like, I'm not canceling this stuff. I'm going to show them I got grit. My crutch went out from under me, went down on the leg, full weight, thought I tore it, had to go back to the hospital, blah, blah, blah. After that point, which was impatient of me, then I said, okay, I'll accept the process. But my natural Lee mentality was just like, no, you're, and that gave me a good feeling. I felt vigorous and confident. It's like, yeah, look, I've torn this. It doesn't matter. I'm out here having these right. meetings still. Good. And then life was like, no, 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 no. You actually need to listen.
Yeah. So yes, you're ringing a bell in me about what my patience level when I was young and sick. And that is that, This is weird and crazy, but I actually think being that sick at that point of my life was somewhat of a blessing, in so much as I didn't have the urgent schedule and the responsibilities that I have now as a father and a business owner and all these things. And I could take my time to heal, to get better, right? I knew life was going to be there, right? I knew that, yes. So I do remember the second time having more, and it wasn't so much impatience as it was disappointment. Mm. And it was disappointment that everyone else was moving. I felt like everyone else was moving on, right? Because you look to your peers. You when we're talking about progress and whatever, you look to your peers to measure yourself against. And I remember thinking, okay, now they will all graduate before me now, right, from college. And they will all get started with, quote unquote, adult life before me now. And yeah, I was disappointed that that was the situation, but I also understood that it was beyond my control. And like, what do I want in that situation? Here's another thing. Like, what are you going for? When there is so much at stake, right? When you're literally talking about life or death, you're way more willing to accept graduating a semester or a year or whatever late because you're going through a stem cell transplant versus never graduating at all because you're dead.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I mean? So, yeah. And that's actually something that's interesting. Let's talk about that when it comes to patience. Because we're talking about interpersonal expressions of patience when you're dealing with somebody who's being a problem, daily hassles when you're suppressing annoyance at delays. We're talking about life hardships, you know, even suffering what you consider to be a serious setback of something that you've achieved, something that you want or something that you've had and you've lost. Well, man, what's the best way to get some patience around any of that? It's reframing. It's reframing. It's like, step back, look at the big picture. What are you talking about? If it's the easiest example to talk about is in the daily hassle situation. Like, oh yeah, you're driving on somebody's bumper and honking your horn because you're going to be a couple minutes late to a meeting. Like, step back, take a look at the big picture. What are you doing? Like, who are you?
Yeah, that's ego.
Yeah. Think about that person. Think of, like, put yourself in the car next to you watching you do that. What do you think about that person? Nothing good, right? Like, come on, man, be the person that you want to be. Be the change you want to see in the world around you, right? So that's easy to reframe something small like that. You know, it's much harder to reframe a situation where someone is causing you a problem in the moment and they're pushing you, right? Boom, boom, boom. Because that's when you have that fight or flight mechanism. To be able to interrupt your mind, like your instant reaction in your mind and go, wait a minute, like, what's the best thing for me to do here? Is it really to just get in a fight? Is it really to just cause this conflict right now? Maybe it is. Maybe it is. But reframing it and taking a minute to pause and step outside of the situation and see it and at least do some sort of like bigger analysis, right? And be like, nope, nope. Chances are if I do this, it's actually going to be worse. You know what I mean? Like if I punch this guy, chances are I'm going to, you know, end up getting arrested or having charges against me or whatever. It's going to be way worse than just letting him cause this problem for me right now. So I'll just let him cause this problem. So that's that. But now the life hardships one, when you lose something or something that you've just always dreamed about and you have to come to terms with, either you're never going to have it or it's just taking way longer than you thought.
Yeah. I think people are impatient in the grieving process. They want to quickly get to acceptance and that's not going to happen. They're just impatient to get through, you know, anger, denial, bargaining, I forget the other one. And then let me just get to acceptance. And then people will trick themselves that they got there and then they revert. And then they think that that's bad or they're weird or wrong. And it's like, no, it's just how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to accept that acceptance is a process and it ain't linear.
True acceptance.
Yeah.
True acceptance is a hard thing to get to. Some people. Yeah. You know what? You were talking about something which was like holding a grudge.
Oh, yeah, man. Resentments are one of the biggest poisons that we have as human beings, and patience can tie into that, of course. But, man, when you hold a grudge, it's not a passive thing. It's active. You literally are using your brain to continue hitting replay on something that happened to you,
And what you're literally doing is trying to get your body to shoot off the negative chemicals inside that create the bad feelings just so you don't let that motherfucker off. You know, and that's just crazy. It's terrible for you physically. It's not good for you cognitively because you're wasting brain power on hate rather than being productive. It's just bad on all fronts. And so what people do when they're impatient for their results or poor communicators is they just take so much of that brain power and the other person doesn't even know a private resentment is forming. And then it just, boom, the emotions explode out.
And the reason yes, absolutely. And the reason why I think we got there is because I think it's not the end all be all of patience, but it's definitely a strategy for patience is letting go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, we had a whole episode on that. Letting go is one of the hardest things people do. And it's tied to goal achievement for many folks is that, oh, well, if I let it go, it means I don't care.
Yeah.
Or it means I gave up. Or it means I'm a loser. It's like, no, that's actually like, in some ways, perhaps it depends on the situation. But in other ways, you're guarding your mental health of yourself, of your family, of your business potentially. You're taking an opportunity cost. You're looking at all the opportunity costs for your reaction in a situation and trying to choose the path less taken.
Yeah. And so I guess if I think about that one and I apply it to patience, I would say the time to use letting go is when in a situation you realize that you don't have control. Because then it can end up happening anyway, but you're not waiting. If you're in the act of waiting, if you're actively waiting, right? So
actively waiting.
You get what I'm saying? Yeah. It's almost like active resentment, like what you were talking about.
Yeah.
You have to keep yourself engaged in the waiting process. You have to keep your expectations going. You have to keep thinking about it, not forgetting about it. Always reminding yourself of what it is that you're waiting for.
Yeah. They took my time.
Versus if it's something that you're like, okay – so let's say we're talking about this in the terms of patience and achieving a life goal, and if it's something I have control over, then letting go is not a good strategy because you need to take actions to achieve that life goal, not just sit around and let go and then hope it happens. That's not a good strategy. On the flip side, there are lots of things that people want in life that they don't have any control over. It's either going to happen or it's not, you know, and they cause themselves pain and suffering by making it an active waiting situation versus just letting go, adjusting your expectations, your bar of what will make you happy or not, and then being pleasantly surprised later when it does happen.
Without approaching nihilism of truly just saying like, oh, I'll just let go of the steering wheel right now and see what happens.
And I think that's why I said there's that control element.
Correct. Yeah. No, I agree. I like what you're saying. It makes sense to me. Man, something else I thought about for patience. For me, really at the core, it's less about waiting and it's more about the perception of time and movement. So for me, I'll just make it concrete what I mean by that. If there's a line situation that you observe, but the line is constantly moving, that creates the perception of momentum. Even if the way they've built the line at that business, it's going to take longer. If you see movement, it tricks your brain. It's a psychological tactic. Six Flags, all the theme parks are masters of this. The same thing with driving. For me, I would much rather extend my drive a little longer knowingly if I can just continue driving rather than sit in traffic. Now, I know myself and I choose those actions, and that's for me. It's not for everyone.
Oh, you're right.
But I think that it can't just be me that feels that way. There's something about the perception of momentum that ties into patience.
That's brilliant, yeah.
As long as we're moving forward towards some goal, even if I do a little detour, I feel better. And since, as we say, it's all about feeling better,
that's what life is.
I choose that over and over.
Life is about emotion. Yeah, I would much rather take the long route as long as I'm moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it might take me longer to get there, but I feel better during the drive.
And if people are with me, that'll be pleasant. If I'm stuck in traffic,
then taking a shorter route that'll get you there faster, but you're just, it seems like you're just sitting.
Yes.
And there's just this buildup of negative emotion and stress. And
that's, man, just the psychology behind waiting and patience. Shit, one thing we haven't even talked about. I was part of a company, not a startup, that ended up failing, but learned many great lessons. So it wasn't a full failure. It was just a financial failure. Called Sigma Crowd, where we were building a product to eliminate waiting. And it's funny because we were so far ahead of the time on this, and now the product's all out there all over the place. But it was basically we were going to develop an app on the smartphone that then connected to a piece of hardware at like a Panera or a stadium, to where when you order your food or hot dogs or beers, you walk up, and then based on geolocation, it would almost be like a big locker system. Your locker would just pop open, and then your food's there, and you grab it and you take it to get rid of waiting. And we put a lot of time, energy, and some money into it, and it was fun. But one of the things we learned is it's less about the waiting, and it's more about the perception of the time. Totally. And if you can give people the illusion of control, that perception over their time, they appreciate that because it makes them feel good. And then there's science behind it, what's going on in the brain and why. But yeah, Sigma Crowd, I forget our slogan, but it was basically – eliminating waiting, you know.
Yeah.
Now again, that wasn't my idea, but it was fun to be part of the project.
Man, I think that's such a powerful idea, is the perception piece of patience.
Yeah.
Talk about alliteration there.
Yeah, I love some alliteration. You know that.
but
perception,
yeah.
Perception piece of patience.
Yeah, like Peter Piper had a perception piece of patience. But if you talk about perception as it relates to patience, gosh, why is that? Why is it that, you know what? I think it ties back to, and we talk about this a lot as well, the happiness episode, progress. If you go to bed and you're building a fence and that fence is 10 feet longer than when you woke up, you feel good.
Absolutely.
Progress.
Yes. Let me make it concrete. Every Tuesday night, I lift at Josh's house, my brother Josh. He lives in Belleville, Illinois. I live outside of St. Louis. So to get there, I have to take a highway, and I can get there more quickly if I go through East St. Louis, which is notorious for having this one train track that when the train gets there, it literally stops. Now, I've timed it because we've had to do this for years. It's literally only adding 3 to 5 minutes each time because I've timed it enough to where it's not bad at all. It's fine. But the perception until you get to that point, you don't know. But when I'm done lifting weights, depending on how I'm feeling, I will go around and take 255, which adds like 15 minutes to my drive. But I want that momentum. It feels like progress. I know I'm not getting home sooner. But I just don't want to sit and wait and stare at a train that ain't moving, even though I'll get home more quickly that way.
Yeah.
But it's weird.
Yeah.
Why? But I do it because I don't know. I just want to be moving at that point.
So how do you take that and apply it to life? Like to know yourself?
Well, that to me is the self-awareness piece.
Yeah. To say, okay, I'm going to potentially achieve something later, but it'll feel better if I do it this way. You know what I mean?
I think investments are that way. People that have investments that have gone up a lot, and other people are like, well, why don't you sell? And it's just like, well, I believe it's going to continue to go up, and I'd rather hold it down the road. That's an intertemporal approach. That's a patient approach, and that's difficult to do.
There's so much here. I'd love to read the studies and think about all the ways this applies, where you have progress or the illusion of progress. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that it made me think of is when you're installing a piece of software, they have this progress bar.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's this is how far along you are.
It's the perception.
And that thing better be moving or else I'm getting upset. You know what I mean? And I've at some point learned that, you know, especially years ago, that was just, it had nothing to do with the actual amount. And it still most of the time has nothing to do with the actual amount of time that it's going to take. Because you'll watch it, it'll like go really fast for a part and then it'll stop and it'll just sit at one spot.
It's emotional management.
Yeah. And when it sits at that spot and it's not moving and you're like, oh, come on. I just want this to get over with. that's the part that causes you the stress, right? That's the
it's
part.
The developer being working with a product designer in a smart way to say, hey, we need this to be a positive experience from the get-go, and they have to obviously install the damn thing before they can use it. We better be trying to do something to mitigate negative emotions during that process.
Right.
And it's all emotional management at that point, I would assume. I don't know, but...
Man, yeah. So I bet the people who would know a lot about that would be like product designers and UI designers. And,
yeah, UI designers, yeah. Absolutely. User interface designers.
Creating the illusion of progress.
Well, they're doing what the theme parks do. That's why there's no clocks at any theme park. That's why they, you know, in the 90s, they started putting up all the TVs in the areas where you wait, all the little water spritzers where you wait. They do all that so that you're not focused on the waiting in the line. Then they also got smart and added the speed pass. So then you can get your immediate gratification to cut to the beginning of the line.
They're monetizing people's lack of patience. I love
monetizing
that.
Monetizing impatience, yes. Is what they've done.
Yes, that's so good.
Yeah. Well, it's smart in the sense that they've – now they just say we looked at a market need, decided there was demand there, and we created the product. And it's just like, yeah, you're just playing on people's impatience and – great, I'll buy that speed pass.
Yeah, which is an entire business. It's like mm-hmm. what made fast food and everything is people's impatience. Amazon, mm-hmm. right?
Oh,
it's
man.
Delivered to your house next day, and they're trying to get the same day.
What they've delivered is impatience times a million.
Yeah. It's
they've made instant gratification. We need a new phrase for what Amazon has done. And I'm saying I'm part of the problem. I order... It isn't even instant gratification anymore. There's like, we need a new category for what Amazon and Bezos has done. We need a whole nother fucking word to create.
It's like we have created systems and processes and we're feeding our impatience. When we were talking about, you know, technology and how technology has enabled impatience earlier, I think about the days when we would go shopping. And you would just be out.
Yeah, with my dad.
The days before cell phones, you know, the days before MapQuest. And it would be like, if you couldn't get a hold of somebody, like, because you called them at, you would call their house. And if they just weren't at their house, well, that was it. They yeah. weren't at their, they must be out. Where? I don't know. They're yeah. just out.
It was leisurely. You yeah. could enjoy it. And you had to just be patient for them to contact you back
yeah.
when they could.
It's like, when are they going to get back to me? I don't know. Hopefully today. Maybe not today. Maybe they'll get home late and they won't call me till tomorrow.
But think of how quickly technology changes, folks. We change ourselves by adopting these technologies. And we're like, yeah, but man, how could life be any different now? I can't go out my door. We already are cybernetic beings. Musk talks about this. We feel so disconnected, naked when we leave without our phone. People will drive 15 minutes and go back to their house if they got their phone.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's good.
No, it's like
when we get shook up from a crisis in the future, that's going to be interesting when that shit goes away for a little while.
I'll say this. I think that there's something – I think that there are more negative impacts – from feeding our impatience than we realize. Because I can remember wondering and curiosity about topics and subject matter. And it was like, if you can't make it to the library to look it up in the encyclopedia or find a book on it, you're just going to have to spend a few days ruminating on it or thinking about it and coming to your own conclusions. Maybe you'll have conversations with people that you think are smart and experts in the subject, and you'll get their point of view. And that – you miss all that now. You just Google it.
Yeah.
You get whatever the first Google result says on the
right.
subject, and then everybody thinks that.
Oh, that's the truth.
That's that. And we miss so much that way.
Well, that's, again, Lee versus she. She would be find the experts, have the conversations, put in some effort to go. But that's what the big time people still do. You know, the people that build giant new companies or dive into beautiful philanthropic relationships, they put in the time.
I've got my change challenge.
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready. I think we've talked. We're like over an hour.
I'm going to identify situations where technology is enabling my impatience, and I'm going to purposely – it's enabling my impatience, but it's also giving me a less full experience. Like just exactly what we're talking about now, right? Like it's a shortcut.
Nice.
I want, and I'm going to take the scenic route. I'm going to not enable it with that technology. I'm going to get the full experience. Instead of just Googling it, I'm going to talk to people who I think might know something about it. I'm going to look for a book on it, something like that.
I like it.
And I don't know how often I'm going to do it, but I'm going to do it at least one time because I think that's interesting. And maybe if I like it enough, I'll be able to sprinkle it throughout my life. At least I hope that I can do that in the future. Gosh, the element of time is such a bastard when it comes to this patience thing.
Patience is a robe for time. It's all time. Mine is identify a process that can help you work on your patience. So tactical level. I literally don't leave my house without my little patience breach protocol. And so I have a list of things that when I start to feel my heat in my chest, which is one of my triggers for I'm beginning to get frustrated, which then triggers impatience, which then can trigger anger. I can feel it in my pocket and know which one I need to do. So find a couple things you can do. Simple, easy things. Breathing is one, but it's got to be something you do, and then do it when you begin to feel impatient. And if not, that then's probably a signal you're not self-aware of what's triggering your impatience. So you'll probably have to start digging in there.
No, I love that. I love that tactics. Okay, I've got a good thought that I want, and then I'll let you wrap us up. I think that my stress when it comes around patience comes from the fact that at this stage in my life, I am running faster than my metronome. I am outpacing my metronome most of the time. I want to do my change challenge. I really love that idea, but I don't know that I'll be able to because it takes time. And I don't know that I'm going to be able to dedicate the time that it would need to do it in the way that I want to and get full enjoyment out of it. There will be a day when I have the resources to restructure the way I spend my time, and I'll be able to do those things more, and I won't be outpacing my metronome at that point, and I'll be a happier person because of it. I'm not there yet. I'm in the provider stage and the earning stage and all that stuff, but I'm working towards that. That's one of my goals. I want to match my metronome, and it's to move a little bit slower and have a little bit more patience and be able to spend more time on activities rather than less. That's me, and that's me knowing myself.
Nice.
Interestingly enough, I'll say for you, I think there are situations where you're doing just the opposite. Mm-hmm. You're holding back your metronome.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, I'm in the crouched position. I'm coiled and I'm ready to pop in a good way towards something. But life has been given me a gift of time right now, a lot of time to do stuff. But I have no one to do it with. I have no one to go play with me when I want to go play. And it's tough. But boy, what a tough gift I have to deal with.
What a problem, right? Both of us, really. Yeah. Yeah.
So we've talked about metronomes, currents, machines, cycles, seasons, being acted upon, acting upon others. Control and time are components of patience. You need to be able to think about what type of patience you bring to different types of scenarios as a father, as a wife, as a mother, as a brother. In the workplace, what stories you want to be remembered by. People are going to talk about your metronome when you're dead, no matter what, and sort of your pace of life. And what do you want those stories to be? So just spend some time, core component there, of thinking about how you're hardwired for patience. Are you hardwired to be more patient, accommodating, enjoyable, willing to work with difficult folks more easily? Or are you hardwired to try to control the currents of life and just do your best to do a blend of both whenever you can? So as we say at Life Lab, experiment with life.